Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It's time. Let's get it underway. It's David Summers, and here comes another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. It's the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring. Let's go back in time as we get wall-to-wall and tree-top tall with the Tennessee stud, Ron Fuller, in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. All right, Ron, fans are definitely enjoying what you're doing. So, I mean, I can hardly wait to find out what's next myself. I never know where we're going to be headed, but it's always an interesting ride. I can't wait until people see what you have in store for them. That's really coming very soon, within a matter of a few weeks.
Yeah, you know, I'm really happy about it, and I'm proud of it. But I hate to have to begin this Studcast, Dave, with an apology, but it looks like I'm going to have to, man. You know, in my rush, kind of to take us up to this next level that we're working toward here, I made a statement in a recent post on Facebook and on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it. About this Studcast, mm-hmm. and about are going to be able to, for the first time ever, to actually show the first video of a match from a Southeastern TV show done 44 years ago in October of 1980.
Right.
And you know, we're so close to doing this, you know, that I kind of was certain that it was going to be able to happen in this Studcast. But, you know, I found out that technology, man, moves at a slower pace than my ambition.
It happens.
Yeah, you know, so we're going to be able in this Studcast to bring fans the audio of this match, but not quite the video yet, you know, and it's coming. And hopefully within the next two Studcasts, we're going to be able to have audio and video, both of us be on the screen at the same time.
I think that's cool, and I know you're working very hard on this on your behalf. I see you every day, the kind of time that you put into this project, and you've been doing this for months, years now. We're definitely very close to totally changing the quality of a Studcast that has been a success for more than 7 years, and as of today, 374 episodes. That is quite an accomplishment in and of itself. I think fans are going to forgive your exuberance, especially if they know what's coming.
Word, exuberance. So I can't wait, man, to tell them to, you know, when it's going to be able to watch what I've only been able to describe from memory. I've been doing it for years, basically for the last 7 years, as a matter of fact, And I've been doing my best over the years to recall as much as possible about what was happening, you know, what has happened all the way up to this point in time, waiting to get to Southeastern's TV shows. So we're only days away from listeners finally being able to see and hear actual pieces of the Southeastern TV shows and matches from the Gulf Coast territory, back as far as late 1980, as a matter of fact. So only that, not only that, but for the first time ever, fans are going to be able to see us as well as we do these new Studcasts.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of scary if they're looking at me. I can guarantee that. Listen, I'm excited about this, though. I know how hard you've worked on this. I've been enjoying all of these studcasts really from day one, and I'm honored to have been a co-host with you for the last number of years. All right, listen, you're not only focused on that, but at the same time, you're in the process of creating your own streaming channel that will contain many of your TV shows from 1980 all the way up to 1988, from Southeastern to Continental and through the USA Wrestling Company as well. I think that's really cool.
Well, you know, I'm going to be all of them that I've been able to lay my hands on are going to be on the streaming channel. And I'm hoping to be able to find them as time goes on, that I can get even more. So it's going to take a little longer than I anticipated to piece all this together, obviously. But I'm happy to announce today, man, we're going to have about 5 or 6 minutes of Charlie Platt and Les Thatcher's audio describing a tag match from the actual TV show of October 25th, 1980.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to feature Joe LaDuke and Plowboy Frazier against Big C 1 and 2. And something very rare is going to happen in this match.
All right. So I don't think you owe an apology, as a matter of fact, for saying that we would be able to see the action today as well. I know that that part is coming very soon. And how about the streaming channel? That is so cool. So when do you think that's going to be ready?
I'm hoping, man, that we'll be taking subscriptions for it very soon, possibly by the end of December or maybe even mid-December. So we are today beginning to put almost right now at this time, we are supposed to be in the process of putting on 80 Southeastern TV shows right now.
Wow. Okay. We could stay on this subject to the entire studcast, but we've got a show to do. So, I mean, now that I know there is something very rare that happens in the tag match for today, I can hardly wait to get to that part of this studcast. Besides this great news, where else are we going to be riding on the show today?
We're going to begin, man, in the old Southeastern territory, going back to Tennessee. And that's going to be the first time in 1980. At this point, that territory is owned by Ric Flair and Blackjack Mulligan. And they were having only their second event since becoming the owners there, after buying out the Georgia promoters, who obviously bought me out. So then we're going to ride south. We're going to find out what the card was that followed my losing an extremely important loser leaves match to the Mongolian Stomper. We'll discuss the TV show that promoted the Southeastern card in the last week of October 1980. And then we'll have that actual piece of audio there that I spoke about earlier. And then we're going to give everybody the results of the matches from this card and the attendances in the three major markets. Then hopefully, if we've got enough time, love to have another great learning tree question like the last one was, man.
Absolutely. I hope we do. As always, it's another loaded studcast. No doubt about that. So tell us about the card. Let's start in Knoxville, Tennessee, last week of October 1980, the same week you're going to be talking about later on in the Southeastern territory.
So about this card in Tennessee, the first thing that I saw that was obviously a mistake for the new owners on this event was the fact that the matches were going to be on a Thursday night rather than the traditional weekend Friday night. And Friday night in that particular town, Knoxville had a tremendous wrestling history all the way back to the early 1900s. And their nights had always been a Friday night for more than 80 years at this point for that promotion. For 80 years, they'd been running on Friday nights. And that was going even back beyond George and John Kazana, who were the guys that I bought the territory from. Before them, they were running matches in Knoxville, downtown, and I think it was the Lyric Theater, way, way back in the early 1900s. So the Crockett family, owners of the Mid-Atlantic Wrestling Company, which are in Charlotte, North Carolina, were basically supposed to be helping Flair and Mulligan make a success out of the old Southeastern territory here. But they certainly weren't going to do that by changing the wrestling night from Friday to Thursday.
Even I know that was not a good idea, Stud. So what about the card for the Thursday night event? Tell us about that.
Well, I've always given a lot of credit to the Crockett family for being great promoters and great businessmen in the wrestling business and for having great talent. Their problem at this point was that the Southeastern fans weren't familiar with their wrestlers because, obviously, they were located in the Carolinas, and those TV stations were on the opposite side of the Smoky Mountains from where Tennessee stations were. And obviously, you aren't going to get that TV signal across those mountains. So that basically, simply put, Tennessee fans didn't know their wrestlers, who they were at all. So, you know, they're going to have a hard time getting those guys over in Tennessee. And I think the fans are going to go, well, we don't know who these people are, so why even go there? So the early matches were with guys that even I didn't recognize. So they were normal fans had no chance of having an interest in it. You know, there would be some names like on their first card. They had Flair on that first card. Even though he wasn't the world champion at that point, he was becoming somewhat known. The first match on this card was a guy named Steve Travis against a Japanese guy called Timuru. Nick Carlo was taking on Rick Ferraro. Didn't know either one of those guys. Johnny Weaver was on the card. He was one of those all-time favorite of the fans in the Carolinas. Great wrestler. But he wasn't known in Tennessee except by people like me and people that had grown up in the business. He was wrestling a guy named Swede Hansen, who was also pretty popular over there on that side of the mountains. Dewey Robinson, who was known as a shooter, took on Sweet Ebony Diamond, who I'd never heard of before. The main event, though, was a good one. It was the World Tag Champions, Ray Stevens and Jimmy Superfly Snuka. Both wrestlers were taking on, both of them were great workers. They were taking on Paul Jones and the Masked Superstar. I was extremely familiar with these guys. I'd wrestled Paul Jones and Ray Stevens many times in the Florida territory as a young guy. And I even won the Southern title from Paul Jones in 1973, I think it was, before I came to Knoxville. So I did not work with Superfly Snuka, though, until 1985. And I made a trip, got a call from promoters in way up there in Minnesota, the Ganyas, you know, they wanted to book me in San Francisco in the Cow Palace against Superfly Snuka. So that's how I got introduced to Snuka. So that had to have been a great tag match, except for the fact it was on Thursday night. And neither of the two owners, as big as their names were not even on the card. And I can't figure that out, you know, why that would be. So very few people knew any of the wrestlers, and the crowd had to have been a very small one because of that situation. And with all that was the fact that the territory was down to a level as bad as it was when I bought it, which was 6 years earlier. Mm-hmm. So that meant these new owners were on an extremely difficult path to make a success out of this continuing to fail territory. I had worked a long and hard time to get that thing off the ground to make Southeastern successful. And they were back down to where long before I even started working on it, it was even worse.
Yeah, it sounds pretty bleak, Ron. I mean, very bleak, actually. So when were they coming back again?
Well, they weren't coming back for an entire month.
I mean,
it's not like they're going to really keep hammering at getting this thing going. So the next show wasn't going to be until November 27th, 1980. It's going to be on Thanksgiving afternoon, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And we had completely sold out Thanksgiving cards from 1976 through 1978. Basically 3 years in a row there. Mm-hmm. Before I sold the territory, we sold out every Thanksgiving. And we're going to talk about this again on the Studcast when we cover our Thanksgiving show in 1980.
Good deal. All right. Are we going to ride south now to Southeastern and the card there, plus the TV show for that card, the results of the card, the attendances for the last week of October 1980? Is that next?
That's it. We're headed there now, my man. So before we discuss the next Southeastern card, let's briefly go back to the last Studcast and basically find out how things ended in that one. We had discussed the extremely successful triple world title cards from the week before, and that it was time for us to take a good look at where we were as a company and where we were going in the future. So Robert was soon headed to Georgia to take over the booking there. Bob Armstrong and I had decided to do the Southeastern booking for the entire upcoming year of 1981 and let Rob take over when he came back in 1982. So we were going to begin moving some wrestlers out. We talked a little bit about this last week, and we're going to be bringing in some new ones over the next 2 months. And I'd already lost the loser leaves match in the last Studcast, and we had two more wrestlers leaving on this Studcast card.
All right, so where were you going, Stud, after losing the loser leaves? I mean, you and Bob had just become bookers, so what now?
Yeah, well, you know, as a booker, man, you always had a plan, you know, and that puts you always a long way ahead of everybody, you know. I wasn't actually leaving for good, but I was coming back, and the way I was going to come back was going to make me more popular than ever. And you had to stay far out in front of some fans who were always trying to figure out what was coming next. So in the coming months and year, we were going to blow fans' minds, doing things that they would never have suspected. And that was what bookers had to do to keep their jobs. Bob and I were part owners as well as bookers. So it was even more important to us to stay far ahead of all the fans, because doing that also made us more successful as a territory and a company. So booking was always basically a game of cat and mouse, and smart bookers loved to play the game.
All right, pretty fascinating stuff, Stud. All right, so are you ready to give us the next Southeastern card? And I think we're going to the last week of October, 1980.
Absolutely, man. So we were determined to not lose momentum. Talked about that a great deal last show. And so we put together on this Studcast another 8-match card. It had just as many matches on it as the recent triple world title cards had. So in the opening match was a wrestler that had not been seen since his first match 7 weeks earlier. And I'm talking about Brad Armstrong, who was going up against Iron Mike Masters, who was a much bigger opponent than Brad was, that was for sure. The second match was Ricky Fields against the Super Pro. Third match was Charlie Cook versus Big Ron Bass. The next match was for the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship. The new champion, Norvell Austin, was defending his belt against the great star from Columbus, Georgia, Ted Oates, one of the two Oates brothers. Great wrestlers, those Oates brothers. And Austin's going to be defending against Oates. The next match after that was the first of two loser leave matches on this card. Big C had enough with Plowboy Frazier, costing him and his partner matches, coming in the ring on TV, coming into the ring, sneaking in the ring in arenas and chat. So he just basically challenged Plowboy to a loser leave match, and that match was booked. Then the next match on there on that card was also a loser leave match. Jerry Stubbs had cost Ricky Gibson the World Junior Championship against Les Thorne 2 weeks earlier. And so last week, Ricky Gibson returned the favor to Stubbs, and he cost Jerry Stubbs the United States Junior Championship that went to Norvell Austin. So both of these guys, they were really disliked each other, and they demanded the loser leave match because of it. They didn't want to wrestle anymore. So, and then for the Southeastern Tag Championship, the champions, Big C 1 and 2, were defending against Joe LaDuke and Bob Armstrong, We lost our bets to them 7 weeks earlier, and they hadn't partnered again for 7 weeks. So they're getting back together, Joe LeDuc and Bob Armstrong. And Rob is going to be going up against the big man himself in the last match on that card, the Mongolian Stomper, new champion, managed by the Big C. And so his interference caused Millie to lose. Mm-hmm. And the loser leaves match, Big C, the week before. And Rob was looking for revenge. And he was also hoping to find it by winning the Southeastern belt from the Mongol.
Wow. I mean, that's a dynamic card, a really good card. Eight matches in all, three championship matches, two loser leaves matches in the same night. All right, so when we come back after the break, we're going to take a brief break, come right back, and we're going to find out how you managed to cover all of this in one TV show. Plus, we are going to make history in this Studcast. We are going to hear, for the first time ever, a Southeastern TV match on a Studcast. That is coming up when we continue right here. Okay, Studcast fans, big news. There is so much happening in the Studcast world right now that very shortly will make what has been a great podcast for more than 7 years and 374 episodes even better, if you can believe that. Ron is not stopping there. He is also creating his own streaming channel, TennesseeStudStreaming.com. TennesseeStudStreaming.com that will have every Studcast ever done, all the Southeastern, Continental, and USA TV shows that he can find, Ask the Stud shows, and many more things that he's created. The Stud is going to become big time overnight and giving his fans more than ever. All right, welcome back, everybody. It's another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. I'm David Summers. This is episode number 374. 374 of these. Can you believe it? The title of this one is Bob and Joe, Southeastern Tag Champs. All right, Stud, we've been talking about it since we began today. So when is this audio of the first ever Southeastern TV match from 1980 going to happen in this TV show? And how did the show open up?
Well, it began, man, with the end of the video of my loser leave match with the Mongolian Stomper from the week before, basically. And where the ring was so full of wrestlers that the Big C, he got his opportunity to hit me with his loaded glove. And the rest is history there. Loser leave, I'm gone. Fans in the studio barely had enough time to react to what they had just seen before they got that historic match that we have been looking so forward to today.
Okay, that's great, Ron. All right, I'm kind of surprised that you were not going to keep us waiting on this one like most of the TV show. All right, to hear this historic match we've been talking about. This originally, if you're ready, folks, this originally took place at the WTVY TV studios in Dothan, Alabama. Okay, not far from where I'm living right now. I think I was like maybe 19 or 20 years old. I might have even seen this one live. All right, so let's do it. Let's replay some history. Here we go.
Your attention, please. Our next match, one fall. Tag team match, TV time remaining. In one corner, at a combined weight of 769 pounds, Stan Plowboy Frazier and Joe LeDuc. Frazier and LeDuc. Their opponents at a combined weight of 512 pounds. Big C's 1 and 2.
It's the Big C's 1 and 2 taking on two big men, Joe LeDuc and Plowboy Frazier, Les.
No doubt who's got the weight advantage here. Is there LeDuc the Lumberjack and the Plowboy? Stan Frazier out against the Big C's 1 and 2, number 2. And Plowboy Frazier, and I'm sure Frazier would like to have number 1 in that ring with him.
Indeed. Collar and elbow center of the ring, and it's Frazier once again pushing his man away over in the ropes. 485 pounds.
You know, know you. How does a man go in and defense against the size that they're encountering here with LeDuc and with Frazier?
There is no way, unless there is double teaming tactics used in a match like this. Good takedown by Stan Frazier.
Frazier back up and at him, moving at 485 pounds around with some authority.
Into the brick wall he goes. Big C number two, looking for some means of a takedown in this case, but thus far he can't find it. Into that bear hug. Now Big C one coming in.
Frustrating time for the C's. They've got to try and control Frazier, and they're unable to do it thus far. Dan Frazier goes to work on number one. Joe LeDuc has number two on the outside, throws him back in. You know, in my wrestling career, I never had to encounter a man the size of Frazier. I'm not sure how I'd handle it if I did, Charlie, except maybe to find a nice fortress, crawl in it, and hope for the best.
That would be a good way out of that situation. Side headlock by the Big C number one on the big man over in the corner. And a hard right from LeDuc to the side of the head. LeDuc is tagged. He's in the ring against Big C number one. Hard right.
You know, when I look at tag teams, I try and divide them. One side to be power, one side to be speed. With LeDuc and Frazier, you've got to give the speed to LeDuc.
Indeed, Joe LeDuc, for his size, 284 pounds, extremely quick, and he can move around that ring like 150 pounds or less.
With a team like this, certainly power is their forte, and I think the C's, number one and two, are finding that out in a big hurry. In control now, the masked men are opening up for the very first time now, Charlie. Taking the wind out of the big schooner's sails, and that's what it's going to take to slow this man down. Referee Jimmy McGuire with his hands full as the masked men switching in and out the feverish pace. Plowboy Frazier jumping. C number two, trying to make it to Joe LeDuc. LeDuc with that outstretched hand, and although it's just a matter of a few feet, it might as well be a mile if he can't make that tag, Charlie.
Now tag is made with Big C number one. And tag is made with LeDuc. LeDuc in, using that elbow, hard right. And he catches Big C two coming in the ring. LeDuc having to fight two men.
The lumberjack blasted away with a drop kick. When you move that kind of weight through the air with that kind of speed, its connection has got to be something else.
He's going for the mask, Les. Going for the mask of Big C number one. And Frazier in, all four men in the ring now. LeDuc being hurtled over that top rope. I don't know if the referee can see that particular move.
That should have been his qualification there, Charlie.
Automatically. Now they're tying up Frazier. Both men working on Plowboy Frazier. LeDuc making his way back into the ring. LeDuc, hard right to the Big C number one. And once again, he's going for the mask. This match is being stopped. This match is being stopped by the referee, I believe. And look at this. No doubt, the man who says he's such close friends with Don Carson is none other than Don Carson. There we see Don Carson in the ring. That mask has been taken off.
Pounding away at Joe LeDuc. Frazier tied up in the ropes, and let's see what's going to happen here. The match, Charlie, technically and officially over. But Don Carson of the Big C and Big C number two still pounding away at Joe LeDuc. They have lacerated him.
A gash has been opened on Joe LeDuc and the Big C's. One being Don Carson continuing to pound away with that glove. This situation out of control. This situation out of control. control. Robert Fuller coming in now. Robert Fuller comes in. Boom! And a hard right. They're out of the ring. I don't know who. The winners will be LaDuke and Frazier, and we'll be back in just a moment.
All right, that was a lot of fun. Fantastic. It took me way back to my younger years, and it seemed like it was a little more, maybe 6 minutes long or something like that for the entire match, and a really good match, too. I can't wait for more of that, Ron. That's pretty cool.
Well, it's definitely coming, Dave, and with the video as well. And so the best thing about that match was Joe LaDuke getting Don Carson's mask off on TV. That very rarely ever happened, and it forced Carson to abandon his big charade here as the Big C for the rest of this show and actually forever in the arenas. And it also left his partner in a very bad situation.
All right, so was Carson going to be coming back out after losing his mask in this situation?
He certainly was, man. And in fact, he was scheduled to be on the personality profile in the middle of the show, him and the Big C with their mask on.
Right.
And fans were going to be extremely surprised with his attitude after he has lost his match when we get down to the personality profile. And, you know, Rob or I, we weren't sure exactly what he was going to do in the profile. We were basically just waiting to see what the profile was going to be like.
All right, good deal. Can't wait for that. All right, so who was on the second segment of the show?
Well, Jerry Stubbs was at the set with Charlie and Les, and he was extremely upset that he had lost his United States Junior Heavyweight Championship the week before to Norvell Austin, compliments of Ricky Gibson's outside interference. And so Stubb, because of it, was demanding the loser leave match with Ricky immediately. He just kept saying, I want it immediately. It's got to happen right now. So Charlie and Les reminded him of what he had done to Gibson the week before. And Stubbs, you know, always with a short memory when it came time that somebody got him, you know, then he needed it. You know, he said he had done no such thing after they told him exactly what he did. And, you know, how he cost Ricky Gibson the World Junior Championship. And Stubbs says, oh, I can't remember doing that, you know, and I've never done anything nasty to Ricky Gibson. You know, they were expecting this. And so they asked the director to roll the video of what Stubbs actually did to Ricky Gibson. And it showed Gibson in a position of possibly beating the world champion, Les Thornton. And that's when Jerry Stubbs entered the ring, and knowing it would automatically get Gibson disqualified, that's how Ricky Gibson failed to win the championship because of just the fact that Stubbs, just all he had to do was step foot in the ring. Referee's got to stop the match. Gives it to the champion. So Stubbs started screaming for them to stop that video right now. You know, he didn't want them to show it. You know, and he says, show what Gibson did to me. You know, and that caused me to lose my belt to Norvell Austin, you know. So Gibson was promising Austin that, you know, in the last show, in the last TV show, that Norvell, you're going to win the belt. I guarantee you this week you're going to win the belt. Basically, I'm going to see to it. And he said, you know, Southeastern Wrestling said, Southeastern Wrestling no longer big enough for the both of us. So before that, they could run that other video. They were about to run that video. Ricky Gibson came to the set, and he agreed right face to face with Stubbs, you know, okay, let's have that loser leave match. I love the idea, right? The crowd popped, you know, and then they popped again, and Ricky knocked Stubbs over the set, over the desk of Charlie, where Charlie Les was, and then Ricky leaned over, and you could hear him say, goodbye, you loser.
All right. There seemed to be a lot of spontaneous things happening on this particular TV show. All right, so who was in the ring next?
The new United States Junior Heavyweight Champion, Norvell Austin, was in there, and he got a big welcome, man. And he didn't take long to start looking like a champion. And he won his patent. He used his patented diving headbutt, which I always loved that move. And, you know, he got himself a three count. And we had to carry his opponent. They had to carry his opponent out of the ring. I think he knocked the guy out when he did him. He hit him with the headbutt.
Wow. So, I mean, it should have been now. I think at this point it should be personality profile time, right? So who was on that?
Well, like I said, man, we had that scheduled for Big C number one. So, and it was taking place basically this profile in two different studios with two different sets of people. Charlie Platt was in the smaller studio with Robert, and Les Thatcher was in the main profile set in the big studio. But there he was with the maskless Big C, surrounded by his friends. Big C2 was out there with him, the Mongolian Stomper, Ron Bass, and the Super Pro. So Robert got the first chance to talk, and he was getting a title shot at the Mongolian Stomper, but was much more concerned about what had happened to me the week before in the loser leave match than even the title match that he had coming and the chance to win the belt. And he'd been prepared to continue his pursuit, basically, of the Southeastern Tag Championship with his partner, Joe LeDuc. They'd been wrestling against the Big C's for several weeks at this point. And so he had asked for this upcoming match with the Stomper after what happened to me. And that was why he wasn't in Joe's corner for that opening tag TV match. It would have been Joe and Rob rather than Joe and Bob Boy. So he told Charles, Rob had told him that he was very happy to see the Big C unmasked by LeDuc earlier in the show, and he hoped that Carson wasn't going to be in the Stomper's corner for the title match that was coming up, and his biggest wish was to get a win for me. So Charlie threw the rest of the profile into the main studio with Les, who was soon to be surrounded by heels. So the studio audience was still celebrating that opening. There was nobody on the set with him at that point. And, they were celebrating the opening of the TV match because here came Carson out. He had no mask on. And, boy, they started taunting him right away, man. But he had a troop with him. He had four guys with him. And as they crossed the studio going to the set, fans in the bleachers started chanting, "Carson, Carson, Carson," because he's got no mask on, right?
Right.
So the Mongolian Stomper covered up Carson's ears with his hands while they were walking to the set. And then the other three guys on the set, they screamed for the fans to shut up, obviously. And so Carson was definitely not upset with his identity being exposed. And he told Les right off the bat, he said, "I'm actually happy about it, Les." He said, "You know," he said, "I'm tired of hiding my handsome face from all my loving fans." Right? And he said, "After today," he goes, "everything is going to fall in place for me and my men. And we're going to start to not just win matches, but we're going to start to eliminate the competition here from here on out." And then he said, "You know, the Stomper here has already started the process last week. He not only regained his championship belt, but at the same time, he sent Ron Fuller packing. And Fuller might never be back here again." He goes, "Who knows if he'll ever come back?" You know, and then he continued gaining momentum as he went along, as Carson was good at, man. He got into things. Yeah. And then he said, "Ron Fuller's little brother now is trying to take up for his big brother, who was gone for good now. And now Robert Fuller is going to be leaving soon himself. We're going to do the same thing to him." And he said, "Not only did Robert Fuller have no chance of beating my Mongol, but he says, there's a very good chance that my Mongol is going to hurt him badly." And he says, "That's going to leave no Fullers in Southeastern wrestling." And then he said, "Bob Armstrong and Joe LeDuc," he goes, "they might get lucky and they might beat Big C 2 over here." He pointed at his buddy. He said, "But they ain't going to beat me for the Southeastern Tag Belts this coming week." He said, and then he goes, "If they win," he says, "they're going to have to face my new team, Ron Bass and my Super Pro. And that team going to get the belts the very first night they try. So then Les kept, you know, kept trying, but he couldn't get in a word. Carson was just rolling, man, and he continued. And he said, you know, without his mask, he said, without my mask, he says, I'm going to wrestle twice each night, several times this week, against that huge, fat slob of a human being, Plowboy Frazier. And then he says, Plowboy's going to be gone too, like Ron Fuller. And then he said, then it won't be long till one more on that same card is another loser leave match. And one more goody two shoes wrestler is going to be gone too. That's Ricky Gibson. Then he said he was going to take over this company, Southeastern, the company. And now he's really going. And he said it had already started with Ron Fuller gone. Now Ricky Gibson and Plowboy Frazier are going to be gone. Then it'll be Robert Fuller. And he says, you know, Don Curtis had better start looking for some new wrestlers. So that was 2 or 3 minutes of his fiery plans for the future that set the entourage. All these guys are with him out there on the set. And boy, he set them on fire, man. And he kind of put a mission in front of them. And the entire heel crew, all of the whole group started hugging each other and celebrating it. And what appeared to be is a new beginning for all of them, man. So let's try it again to get more comments. But they were ignoring him at that point, and they all left the set. And they, you know, and when I watched this show, I lived in Pensacola, and obviously I was an owner of a territory, and I watched this show, and it was just a few days after I'd gotten beaten in the loser leave match that it came on. And I saw those guys, they jerked Carson up and they put him on their shoulders and they carried him back to the dressing room with a studio full of fans booing as loud as they could. They didn't care. The heels were, they were having a party.
They were so proud. It sounds like Don Carson had all the heels on the same page and was geared up to clean house. I would expect nothing else from that personality. All right. So who is in the next TV match?
The Mongolian Stomper. And you knew what that meant, Dave.
Well, after that personality profile, with all of them fired up like that, I can only imagine that studio crowd had to be headed for hysteria, right?
Yeah, you know it, man. Carson and the group, man, they enjoyed that profile so much. It made Stomper's rampage that he usually was on that much worse than usual. In fact, it was so bad that many of the studio people never returned to the bleachers. After he tacked them on the bleachers, they all ran like usual, but they waited until he had already beat his opponent and went back to the dressing room before they finally came back into the studio.
It sounds like this TV show set a fire under the heels. No doubt. All right. So how about the last segment of the show? Who was in that?
Well, my brother, Robert. And, you know, he went to the ring after his opponent was already there and his opponent had already been introduced. And when he got there, Don Carson, the Mongolian Stomper, Ron Bass, Super Pro, and the Big C, too, all of them that had been on that profile, all of them came out of the dressing room and they lined up along the wall over there, right on the far side of the ring, really close to the ring. You know, that studio was very small for the ring and all those bleachers and stuff. So now they've all come out and they've lined up on the wall there to watch his match.
Okay. All right. So, but wait, didn't you say all five of the wrestlers that were on the personality profile came out of the dressing room and lined up on the wall next to the ring? So how intimidating was that? I mean, what was going on? I mean, were you still watching the TV show from, like, I guess from your home in Pensacola?
Yeah. You know, and I'm wondering, too, what is going on here, man? And I'm sure none of the wrestlers in the other dressing room or the fans in the studio had an idea of what was going on. And you're right. I had never seen heels do something as intimidating as that during a TV show in any territory. No place in my career had I ever seen something like that happen. So the TV studio, when they all five got out there, they went silent, like they were just buzzing a little bit about what is this all about? Like me sitting at home in Pensacola, you know? And then Bob Armstrong and Joe LaDuke and Ricky Gibson and Norvell Austin, Charlie Cook, Plowboy, every one of them came out of their dressing room. They went and stood on the opposite side of the ring from the Eagles. And the studio crowd exploded at that point. They thought they were going to really see something crazy here, right? The bell rang, and Robert didn't take long before he finished his opponent off. He beat him with the Fuller leg lock. And as soon as he won the match, Carson led his heels back into the dressing room, never said a word.
All right, so I must have missed the TV show. I would have definitely remembered this. So what was at the end of the show? Remind us on that.
Well, Joe LaDuke, Bob Armstrong, and Rob went straight to the set. As immediately as when Rob won, when the heels went back in the dressing room, they went to the set rather than going back into their dressing room. Mm-hmm. The other guys went to the dressing room. The three of them at the set, each of them had something to say about what had just happened. And they talked about how I was cheated and I was forced out of Southeastern the week before in a loser-leave match, and how there were two more of these loser-leave matches coming this week. And they made a great point about how damaging and disrupting losing those type of matches was for guys' families and for themselves, and how dramatically it changed their lives forever. And it did. You had guys that were there. They loved the territory. All of a sudden, they're gone. Their family's got to pull up. They got to leave. It was a bad deal, though, what was happening.
Wow. I mean, that has to be a fact for real. So what a great TV show this one turned out to be. All right. With all this going on, what happened the next week as we go to the arenas for the big events?
Well, Brad Armstrong won his second ever match against much bigger Iron Mike Masters. Super Pro beat Ricky Fields. Ron Bass got a close win over Charlie Cook. Charlie Cook was a great wrestler, but Bass managed to get a win. Norvell Austin won his first United States Junior Heavyweight Championship defense against Ted Oates. The unmasked Big C, Don Carson, sent Plowboy Frazier packing, man. He beat Plowboy, and wow. And he had a little help doing it. But he needed to. Plowboy is a pretty big boy.
Yeah.
Jerry Stubbs did the same. He sent Ricky Gibson packing. Bob Armstrong and Joe LaDuke, they won the Southeastern Tag Belts from the unmasked Big C, Don Carson, who never wore the mask again, and Big C, number two. Robert won over the Mongolian Stomper when Don Carson, third appearance tonight, basically got the Stomper disqualified. Mm. Rob didn't get the belt, but he did get a win in the match.
A really big card, no doubt about it, with two more baby faces gone and new Southeastern Tag Champions. All right, so how about the attendances? Set us up on that for the three major cities.
Well, this card had eight matches, and as you mentioned earlier, Montgomery held up very well. It had 4,500 people again. It's about the same size crowd it had the week before. Dothan did just about as well, too. Only dropped 200 fans. Basically from 5,000 to 4,800. Mobile, as always, filled the building, and they turned some away again with another 6,000 crowd. That's all the Expo Hall would hope.
All right, so, I mean, to me, it looks like we will have time for another Learning Tree question this week. That's good news. If you're ready for that, Stud, a gentleman named Tim Evans says, I listened to Studcast number 370 yesterday. It was another great one. With having Harley for multiple days, were there any thoughts of him dropping the title for a few days? Interesting.
Yeah, that's a very good question, Mr. Evans. And I've had a lot of people ask me that, you know, and I'm sorry to have to admit it, but I was not a fan of those temporary NWA world title switches. And I know it was done on many occasions by several territories that had the champion for about a week at a time, like we did, basically, on the Studcast where we had the triple world championship cards. We had Harley five times in 9 days, and we could have done the same type of thing that that Florida territory, the Georgia territory, Japan, a lot of other territories did, you know. And there was a couple of reasons for me personally that I didn't like it. And first of all, I think that that particular belt, that NWA 10 pounds of gold, had become so significant because of the fact it was rarely switched from one champion to another. And when it happened, it meant something special took place. And that fact alone was special. The title was so important because of how few wrestlers ever won it. That's how it became that important, because it didn't change hands very often. So, and there were quite a great number of territories in the National Wrestling Alliance, and each one of those territories paid the same amount to be a member. Your bigger territories didn't pay more than smaller territories. You paid the same to be a member. And by being a member, you have the privilege of having an NWA world title match. And some people only got one a year, you know, but they got a world championship match in their territory. And in my opinion, if you were going to allow some territories, as an example, to have the champion drop the belt, they come in on a Monday, and then they switch the belt back to the champion again on Friday, mm-hmm. Then who's to say what territories qualify to do that and which ones didn't qualify to do that? It had to be fair. And to be fair, how big does your territory, would your territory have to be before you qualified to do that? Or if it's a small one, do you never get to do that? You know, I mean, so then, you know, there's a question as you do that also, too, about as the list of champions grows, when you switch it more and more, then does that not detract from the belt's importance? So, you know, thanks for it's a very good question, Mr. Evans, and it's a very controversial one. And I hope I've answered it to your satisfaction. And I think my grandfather, Roy, who was a founding member of the NWA in 1948, I think he'd probably agree with me.
You never fail to leave me speechless. So with some of these learning tree questions and answers, Stud, this has definitely been another great one. All right, where are we going to be riding on the next Studcast?
Well, we're only two episodes away, Dave, from Southeastern's opening of Birmingham, Alabama. And so I'm going to spend some time in the next one telling listeners about the final preparations for that event. Fans there had already been getting special interviews and announcements on their two TV shows. There were two stations in that city. And in fact, they were going to get a show that was just for Birmingham. We were really pushing to bust Birmingham big time in this opening event. And then they also had those billboards there that had been out for 2 months. And then we're going to be focusing on another big card in Southeastern, next week's big card. And obviously we'll talk about its TV, the results of the matches, and hopefully another learning tree question again.
Well, hopefully so. Man, what a great one this has been. You know how to get hooked up with Ron anytime on Facebook. You can find Ron at Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud. Like and follow him there. Automatically become friends with a living legend. And Ron loves to answer questions right there on Facebook. If you've got something, you can drop him a line on Facebook. Even if it's a comment, I see him respond all the time. Twitter or X, Ron Fuller Welch, follow him there also. Check out the fantastic website, tnstud.com. This Studcast is going to be there with every Studcast ever done. The Stud Store is where you can get 43 Super Studcast, 4 different 8x10 photos, and his best-selling novel, Brutus, personally autographed to you. You can get hooked up with all that. And subscribe to Ron's YouTube channel. It's called Southeastern Rewind. When you go to YouTube, in the search bar, put in Southeastern Rewind. It's the first thing that comes up. Find hundreds of hours of classic old school wrestling entertainment, 449 total videos, the last 152 stud casts, Ask the Stud shows, and short rides with the stud as well. Go back 1 year or more and discover fantastic stud stories with worldwide stars, Studcast archive stories, Tell Me More fan question shows, superstars of the past shows, and so much more. It's YouTube, Southeastern Rewind. It's the best deal in wrestling. All right, any last words today, Ron?
Well, this is, you know, very exciting time for me, Dave. I've really, really enjoyed what I'm working on here, and I'm working hard along with people like you, man, to make so many things possible in the coming weeks. I really appreciate everybody's continued support through all this, and please take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/dsummers955, on Twitter, now known as X, also Dave_doing, as in Dave's doing stuff. Dave doing stuff on Instagram. It's Instagram.com, David Summers Productions, and hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud LLC.
Thanks for joining us today for this historic studcast. The true story continues next week. So full Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
1, 2, 3.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.